Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Michael Redbord, who is General Manager of the Service Hub at HubSpot. Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing, Adrian?
I am splendid, sir. I'm splendid. So, Michael, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and a bit about the work that you do?
Yeah, sure. So nowadays, as you said, I'm the general manager of our Service Hub product line, and that's one of three product lines from HubSpot, right? So basically, my job is to build and take to market this product, which is really 100% focused on the customer experience end-to-end. That's what the product line does.
Okay.
I've done a bunch of other things at HubSpot in the past, but that's the focus nowadays.
Okay, perfect. Now, as you know, and also as regular listeners to this podcast will know, I mean, I recently spoke to your colleague, Eva, a few weeks ago about customer success and what that means for HubSpot, et cetera, and the lessons that you've learned. But she also talked to me about and mentioned that you've been involved with customer service at HubSpot right from almost the beginning, and you've helped sort of build and scale up the team. And that's one of the things I'm really interested in is it's all very well to talk about what great customer service is, but sometimes the real challenges comes when you try and scale something, or you grow it, or you kind of you spread it out. So is that right that you've helped build HubSpot service team from the ground up? Is that kind of what you've done before the Service Hub?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think growth is hard. It's never accidental, right? Growth is quite deliberate, but it's also messy, right? So, you know, when I started at HubSpot, we were, you know, under 100 people. We had maybe under 1,000 customers or something. And then, you know, nowadays we're 45,000 and thousands of people. It's been quite a story of growth.
So can you give us a bit of the potted kind of history? I mean, and also kind of like, I guess what I'm really interested in because is this idea that you like you said, is that growth is sometimes hard, and there's sometimes we call it in the UK like potholes in the road. I think that's the same in the US, and there's bumps along the way, and sometimes the bumps are the things that actually teach us more than when things are going kind of well. So it'd be interesting to hear from you, you know, what you've experienced, what things, how things kind of happened, what you kind of did, and also some of the lessons that you've learned along the way.
Yeah, I really like the pothole analogy, actually, because I feel like the way this goes, you go along, you hit a pothole, and it really hurts, right?
Yeah.
And it gets really hard for a period of time. Then you manage to pass that pothole, and you have a bit of sort of smooth sailing for a bit, to mix metaphors here, right? Then you go along, there's another pothole, you hit that one, and there's sort of this ebb and flow back and forth with the pothole times and the really fun times.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about that history of HubSpot that I've lived and all that growth and our customer growth, right? If I think back to the very early days, I would describe that as a really fun phase. You know, we were under 2,000 customers. It was like crazy growth. The services team was maybe, you know, 20, 30 people. The company was, you know, 80 or 100, right? And it was just like, it was a lot of fun. And I don't think that's rose-colored glasses. I think that's what hyper-growth feels like in a startup environment, right?
Sure.
And it's not until you really reach some scale and everything that's fun starts to become a thorn in your side and starts to break that you hit that first pothole and it gets really hard, right? And so for us, that was around, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 customers. And what happened was we rewrote our platform like every startup does or every SaaS startup does along the way. And churn just really started to spike, and managing that change of growth plus platform change plus all the hiring we were doing and everything started to be a real issue. It got really hard. For that point in time, you know, our service team was, you know, probably around like 50 to 100 kind of people. The company was, you know, in the hundreds, and we had, again, like 5,000 customers or so. And so we sort of went from fun and everything that we liked started to become really hard. And then, you know, it continues cyclically like that. I think after we solve some of those problems and figured out, okay, how do we actually just retain our customers and get them the value that they want? We really started to grow again. And in fact, our growth really ripped. So at this period in time, you know, we probably went up to like 20,000 customers or so. We had an IPO, which was quite successful and an incredible amount of fun, I might add. And then, you know, the service team kind of grew up into the hundreds and the company grew up into the 1,000 employee mark or so. And that was just a really, really fun period of time once again. And then, of course, the pendulum swung back once more, right?
Yeah.
And as we began to move from just a company that was a simple, I guess, app, like an application, to more of a suite-based company, that again is a real sea change. And, you know, at this point, we probably had more like 30, 40,000 customers. You know, we introduced this concept of the growth stack, which is a sales plus marketing suite. And things got hard because you started to need to change the way that people work together to accomplish their goals. So it kind of swings back and forth, the pothole and then the smooth sailing.
And do you think that's to do with, because the thing that you know, is that cyclical thing. Do you think those things, I mean, this is not a confession, I hasten to add, but I mean, is it that you think that the potholes are brought up, are almost like self-inflicted, and that you've tried to change, the company as a whole has tried to change too many things at one time, and therefore there's almost this lack of coordination, but that's just an element of growing up?
I think that some of those potholes are self-inflicted. I think our COO, J.G. Sherman, describes himself as our chief pothole officer, right? And I think with sufficient foresight, you can avoid a lot of them. Not all of them, right? You can never avoid problems, but sometimes they are self-inflicted, and sometimes they're kind of a cost of growth, right, along the way. Other times, though, I actually think it's the very thing that enabled you to be successful at one stage of your growth actually becomes your handicap at the next stage, right?
Right.
And so, you know, the fact that you have a certain set of business practices or you go to market in a certain way, that can get you so far, but it's going to need to change. And in fact, it becomes quite addicting, that growth does, in one phase. And then when it breaks, it can be really jarring. And that's not necessarily a pothole of your own creation. That's more of just what worked then isn't going to work now, and you need to change the game.
And when things actually do break, as it were, or get hard, I mean, what's been your sort of typical kind of response? Because actually that's the thing, when the things that get really fragile are customer relations. I mean, I think what'd be really interesting is to hear how, you know, you guys have responded to that to try and maintain that, you know, service levels or to bring them back up, but also to as you say, to foster retention and, you know, maintain those relationships.
Yeah. I mean, so personally, I really sort of enjoy the, like the wartime, right? I think that it enables you to really shine in some ways. And an example that comes to mind when you mention that is what, you know, what we in HubSpot went through around 2013, right?
Right.
And this was like, it was really, things were really heating up, and we had just rewritten the platform, like I said, all that. And I think the thing you want to do is actually just sort of retreat to a really human standpoint and almost cast off your illusions of being a big business or a corporation or a company or a product or whatever, and just sort of retreat to being human. And what that means is you need to be really honest, right?
Yeah, right.
You need to only bite off what you can chew, and you need to focus on like just excellence with the work that's in front of you. That's a very human response to it. And so when we had all those challenges at one point in the road, you know, we were honest with our customers about what was going on. We reduced the number of channels that we worked with them on and said, look, this is what's going on. Until such point as things change, this is the way we're going to operate. We're very upfront with them. And we focused a ton on training for our team so that when we did have an interaction, those interactions were as good as we could possibly make it on a human to human level. So to me, you sort of just, you almost retreat to that defensible core, and then you work on building back out from there over time.
Right. I mean, that reminds me of there's this thing in psychology called the service paradox. And it's the paradox is that actually customer satisfaction can go up after a company gives a great response to either a problem or complaint. I mean, has that been your experience? You experience the problems, but if you work hard at at a great response with the right sort of intent and actually be very human about it, that actually it actually builds better relationships. So don't, I guess my point is, don't be afraid of it, but lean into it.
Yeah, I think that's a phenomenon I've observed. I mean, if you take it for a given that you're going to have potholes along the road, right, then the question becomes, how do I have fewer, right?
Yep.
But and then how do I make the most out of every one of those episodes? And I do think that if you can manage to handle it well, and often that just means like really almost uncomfortably high amounts of directness and transparency, then you can't come out of it well. If you try to sort of sugarcoat it or add a layer on top of it of, you know, even business speak, like the words you use in these situations really, really matter.
Yeah.
Then it tends not to go very well. It's just got to be super direct and honest.
And how have you gone about sort of have you gone about, given that it's the bumps in the road and things, I mean, how have you gone about trying to proactively identify those kind of problems? Because that seems to be also the key to being delivering great services, is almost trying to identify the problems before they actually show up for customers. And is that something you started to build into the way that you operate?
Yeah. So, the dream for every company, for every service organization is to be, move from that reactive state where someone is saying, help, I need something, this is on fire, to proactive and saying, hey, look, don't light that match because, that's going to blow up, right?
Yeah.
And so I think the way that you do that is pretty interesting, especially as you grow. So when you're a small company, you tend to be in quite close contact with your customers, right?
Mm.
You don't have that many customers, and, you have closer relationships with them because they had to take a leap of faith. They have to have high level of trust in you to be an early customer, right? And so, your owners, your partners, your executives, like, they're on the phone with your customers or they're interacting, having the service interactions. As you scale up, you sometimes lose some of that closeness, right? And so what it means to then avoid those problems and like get more proactive, if you lose the sort of touch point with your customers as you grow, you start to fail to see what's going to hurt them or what's going to benefit them. And as you grow, if the closer you can stay to your customers, to their feedback and their experiences, the more you can help to be proactive.
Right.
So there's this funny thing that goes on where when companies are really small, they tend to have really excellent service. And as they grow, it tends to break down. And the reason it breaks down is because they sort of drift away from their customers. And that's actually what causes them to fall into this reactive mode where they can't, get out in front of these problems.
So I know that you've actually learned this kind of the hard way, but actually you kind of you've also written about this idea about scaling and scaling actually goes in stages and stuff. And you had an article that was published in the Harvard Business Review. Congratulations, by the way, in September of last year, and you created almost a bit of a map, a textual kind of map, as it were, of the different stages that scale-up organizations kind of go through. I mean, what would be really useful is if you could share what you think some of those different sort of stages are that the customer service teams go through and what they should be thinking about focusing on and also not focusing on each stage, because I think that's just really illustrative, because it's going to give people, an idea of going, oh, well, I'm here or I'm here.
Yeah. So I've observed like about four or five stages in growth, and then how service teams should sort of think about themselves, the do's and don'ts, and how they should operate. And I guess, my experience personally is very HubSpot-centric. It's one example.
Sure.
But I've worked with, hundreds of our customers and, hundreds of other businesses. And you just start to pattern match, and you start to see, you start to see an abstracted set of stages here. So like the first one that I've seen is just that beginning stage that I mentioned,
yeah.
Right? And typically, that's your founding stage, kind of. You've got like just a couple of employees. It's maybe just your founders even, right? And oftentimes there's maybe one person whose job it becomes to do service, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, their job is really to get through the work. And the place where they go right is if they can set up, some simple, really, really simple communication channels just to make it clear to customers how to get in touch with them, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't text our CEO, but send an email to me, right?
Yeah.
And they just need to really communicate well about what's going on inside the business. Those customers want to take the ride with you. And so it's a different type of relationship that you have, a different level of trust and transparency, in fact, than as you start to grow as a business. So that founding stage is sort of special. It's kind of the primordial ooze of a company.
Yeah.
Typically, people are pretty good at it, because if you're not, you tend to die.
Yes.
And so if you do manage manage to grow, right? If you do manage to grow, you sort of get to the stage where you're, you know, maybe you're five, a dozen, even two dozen employees, right? And at this point, what you really, I think, want to do is establish those communication channels as a little bit more of a formal, you know, mechanism where you say, look, the way to get in touch with us is to do this, this, or this. It's not just saying like, this is a better way. It's saying this is actually the way. So you start to like establish a little bit of process like that. Right. You also then can probably start to establish just a tiny bit of like reporting and start wrapping some numbers around your service work. In that founding stage, there's often no time for reporting and numbers. It's just, you know, it's just trying to get through the work. As you start to grow, you can provide a little tiny bit of process, not too much, just a little bit, make it work. You also probably are starting to see some issues that are like getting repeated, right? And so you're seeing the same question over and over. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, maybe isn't going to be possible to fix in your customer experience or in your product. So you start to think about, okay, should I like start a knowledge base or write a, you know, frequently asked questions document or something like that, just to make the customer experience again smoother so they can self-service.
Okay.
The thing I see people do at that stage that's interesting, I think, is they want to get really sophisticated really quickly. And, you know, concepts like, you know, a lot of automation or a lot of, you know, a lot of like chatbots or things like that.
Analytics, those can be really, as well.
A lot of analytics. Yeah, those can be really cool, but they strike me in that phase as kind of like shiny object syndrome, right? Where the amount of operational work it tends to take to get those up and running doesn't pay back in terms of the amount of customer work that you're doing. Because if you only have 10 or 15 customer interactions a day, right, and you manage to automate 5% of them or something, right, like it's just the juice isn't worth the squeeze. And so my recommendation to folks in that stage is really focus on the customers. They focus externally on that experience, not internally at the processes you use to service them.
Perfect.
And then as you kind of keep growing, like the story evolves, right? You get into this phase where you maybe, you know, many dozen employees, 200 to 100 employees. Culturally, inside the business, things begin to change at this point. People don't know each other as well. You know each other's names, but you don't know everything about them, right? Yeah. You don't know their kids' names, for instance.
Yeah.
And so at this point, like process does become a little bit more important. You start to really solidify what you measure. And also you start to solidify how you communicate about what you measure. You know, the question to ask yourself is, do those service metrics have, you know, equal billing with your sales metrics or your product metrics when you do, say, a company meeting? Because probably you started to do some more formalized company meetings here. I think that's pretty important. You start to kind of solidify your self-service and, you know, grow that knowledge base or something. And you probably start to solidify specialization too, which is like, oh yeah, well, we have one person that handles questions only on that, one person that works only with these types of customers, et cetera, right?
Okay.
And I think that that's a really exciting phase because you get to get really good at things that previously you've just sort of managed to get by on.
Sure.
And the pothole here is, I think, for teams who, you know, really aim for a lot of efficiency, right? And like efficiency becomes their thing. And they're like, oh, we want to get each person to do two more tickets a day. And the fact of the matter is you're not big enough yet for efficiency to be the growth lever, right? Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's still all about the customer at that point. As you grow and you're, you know, over 100 folks, you know, then you start to have leaders with more complex goals. You start to say, yes, we do want to get more efficient, right? And you start to create more permanence in your systems and your setup. But, you know, when you're still under 100 employees and growing, you really want to be nimble and focus on the customer. So that's how I think about the stages anyway, in those sort of four or five different chunks.
I mean, that's really helpful, Michael. And we'll make sure that we point people to the article, because it actually goes into a lot more kind of detail and sort of splits it out really well. And I read it and I thought, yeah, no, that's really useful, because there's a lot of challenges that I think will be sort of, they'll be shared and people will identify with in the articles. I thought it was really useful. But let's go back to, you know, HubSpot for a second. And because what I wanted to understand as well is, like, as you've grown and as you've scaled, I mean, how have you managed the sort of the customer service standards for your team? Because I've seen people that have approached it, they very tightly control their standards, and some people are less so, and they just almost enable their people, and then the quality kind of just emerges. I mean, what have you done, and how has that affected the sort of the people that you hire and so on and so forth?
Yeah, well, you got it from my sort of my explanation of how I see the stages, which is that as you're growing in particular, you need to put process in the backseat and put people in the front seat, right? And so, like, when I think about that question and how do you sort of, you know, establish and scale standards, it starts with your people. And and probably ends there, in fact, for many companies if you're not quite large yet. So when I hire, I look for really traits and not skills. I can teach somebody about marketing. I can teach somebody about a product or something technical, provided they have the capacity, right?
Yeah.
So I look for traits like you need to love to talk to people. Like you need to actually want to go to work every day and to talk to people.
Right.
And almost shockingly, that's actually hard to find, I think, especially nowadays when we have sort of more, just dramatically more digitized communication and, you know, Instagram becomes like a primary form of communication along with Snapchat, right?
Yeah.
Actually wanting to interact deeply, almost like we are now, just in a conversation, is actually tricky. So that's really my number one thing. You need to hunger for that in your day-to-day. You need to be a problem solver. And then, you know, we have some cultural values at our company that I think have been a tremendous boon to our growth. We call them, it's like an acronym, we call it HEART. You know, it's about being humble and effective and adaptable and remarkable and transparent. And we have ways that we can behaviorally test for those in an interview environment, and ensuring that everybody sort of demonstrates those principles gives us a really solid and consistent cultural foundation across the business. But then that kind of comes through to your customers too, when you're talking to them.
And you talk about this idea about being wanting to talk to people. I don't know about you guys' support. I mean, in terms of where you are now, does that mean that your people actually are on the phones talking to customers as well? I mean, I understand how that would facilitate it internally, because it means you're kind of more open and willing to kind of work together with your colleagues. But I mean, how much kind of work do you do actually on the phone with clients, and how much of it is digital?
Yeah, we do a fair bit on the phone with clients. It's probably like a 50-50 split.
Okay.
And, you know, because our sales teams and our success and account management teams are, you know, they're inside sales and service, right? You're doing a lot through screen shares and video,
right,
and phone,
okay,
and stuff like that. And the same carries through to our support team. I don't think you can offer a different commercial front for your sales team where, you know, you do video chat in real time, and then in service land, you say, no, we only do these two things. You need to carry it through. And so we have a pretty consistent channel mix across the different phases of the life cycle.
Okay. And going back to what you said about this idea of you hire for traits, and then because you can train sort of skills, I mean, what role in that makes me think about mindset, particularly from a management and leadership perspective, and around the role it plays in being able to scale a service operation successfully. I mean, do you find that if the management's mindset's not in the right sort of space, i.e. they're more focused on cost rather than growth and the value that service can add, is that one of the biggest hurdles that companies have got to get across to be able to enable success?
Yeah, I guess some of the perspective that I'm advocating for here is a little bit of patience, right? Hire somebody with the right traits, train them on the skills, right?
Right.
And I think growth is a long-term exercise that also requires some patience. And if management at a company, right, defines growth as, you know, just grow the top line only in the next couple of months, that's a pretty impatient perspective on it. And at least my goal is to establish a company that lasts generations, right?
Yeah.
And has a longer perspective. And so, right, if growth is then about the near term and only top line, it can be challenging, right? But if growth is about a mindset and an organizational construction that enables growth, and in fact, faster growth as you continue to grow, right? Then I think service can really be a key part of that. And companies that see it that way tend to understand the flywheel effect that their customers
right.
can have on their growth.
Yeah.
Right. So if you just view customers as like an output of your sales and marketing funnel, you're probably pretty overweight on investment in sales and marketing, and you're probably pretty underweight in your customer experience, and your customers are probably bad-mouthing you too, whether or not you know it. But if you give your customers a seat at the table, right, your customers can actually be a tremendous accelerant to growth and really get your flywheel going. And any good marketer knows the first people you talk to figure out, you know, your marketing persona and stuff like that, it's your customers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so if you're able to enable your customers to feed back into your marketing and back into your advocacy, service can be an awesome growth center as opposed to just a cost center.
You know, that you just reminded me of a story that I read. I think it was on Medium a couple of months ago, and it was some guy, he's affiliated with an ad agency or something, and he was bemoaning the fact that now, I think in Cannes this year or last year, they were actually giving awards out to marketeers who'd gone out and spoken to customers, as if that was an abnormal behavior.
That's, I mean, good. At least they're holding those folks up, but disappointing that that's award worthy, I guess, because it should be where every great marketer, marketing agency, ad firm starts.
Yeah. So let me also kind of ask you a question, because we're talking about scale, and but then you're also going to talk about growth. And I think that the thing that I always I also kind of think about is this idea, and I guess because it applies to many kind of firms, because they always talk about growth, and it seems that bigger is the thing that follows growth. There's like growth is always about bigger, but I mean, is it? I mean, or is growth something else?
Yeah, I think growth being defined as bigger is sort of a necessary but not sufficient condition for success, right? And so, you know, yes, companies want to grow. It's what you need to do as a business, especially a private business nowadays, right? So yes, you need to grow your top line. It's not evil to do so by any means. But I think what you want to do is think about, you know, growth as, all right, we want to grow, but we want to grow in a better way tomorrow than we do today.
Yeah.
Right. And that means different things to different companies. So yeah, okay, cool. Your top line's growing. You have a chart that goes up and to the right for that. But what are you working on inside your business that's going to cause you to grow not just faster or not just at a continued rate, but better? And oftentimes that really has to do with your customers, right?
Yeah.
It's about improving their experience as you get to that next phase of growth. How do we do better when we're a scale up than when we were a startup? And that's not just about, you know, more process or, you know, oh, we're finally going to offer, you know, this support channel or something. It's actually about engineering and architecting the experience of those people, your customers, to get better and basically take advantage of your size. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually a very, very tricky bit of acrobatics for a company that does really want to grow and is able to invest enough energy to create that growth effect and get their growth going up and to the right. It's hard to do both at the same time, but I would argue that you need to do them to be a really, truly standout generational type company.
Yeah, no, thank you. Actually, we've talked a lot in the abstract about different stages and different, you know, areas of focus and things. Perhaps you could bring this to life a little bit and give us some examples of, you know, some customer service stories that it shows or exemplifies kind of your team in action. I mean, I guess to humanize it, I guess, if you know what I mean, Michael.
Yeah,
so that'd be great if you could share a couple of stories with us. That'd be awesome.
Sure. So, here's one that comes to mind here. It's about a period that I mentioned earlier, which was when we were kind of in one of those pothole states.
Yeah.
Right. And we had, you know, we had just kind of rewritten some stuff in our platform. Things were going south incredibly quickly. Basically, I would come into work every day. I also remember that our HVAC didn't keep up. So the room that we were in for support was just incredibly hot. Right. We were all sweating all the time, too. In addition to having, you know, a TV that had a bunch of stats on it that were all red all the time. And so things were not good. And we generally speaking, you know, would have a lot of users waiting on hold to talk to us, right? Or waiting in a queue to get a response because we were just overwhelmed. And we were trying to hire as fast as we could. But, you know, there were a few months there where you need to get those hires trained up, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I remember we got a tweet, of which we got many during that period of time, mostly which were upset with us in some way when we were in that sort of startup phase. And I got a tweet from a user that said she actually enjoyed our hold music, right? And I was hearing a lot of comments at the time of people that were really sick and tired of hearing our hold music because they've been on it for 10 minutes.
Well, right.
This user actually, I don't know, she, for whatever reason, was in a good mood or something. And that positive energy kind of leaked out into Twitter. And she said she thought it sounded like the kind of music that you hear when you're getting a massage, right?
Okay.
And I was like, I just thought this was funny. And so I thought, man, it's really been a rough week or a rough month here. So I looked her up in our CRM. I got her office location. I sent her a massage gift certificate with a link to the tweet, right? I said, hey, saw you just tweeted this. We wanted to make your day a little bit better. Now you can actually do the massage instead of, you know, just tweeting about it. I didn't actually hear anything back from her, which was fine, right? I didn't really expect to. It was something I sort of did offhandedly. And I told this story then on a stage in front of like 1,000 people at our annual conference.
Right.
And from the back, somebody starts yelling at me, a voice pipes up, says, that's me. I was the one you sent the message to. So I immediately turn bright red. I'm totally thrown off of my script. And I say something like, all right, like find me afterwards. We have to talk about this. I think it probably ruined the rest of the talk. I don't really remember what happened, but I met with her afterwards and, you know, she was amazing. She was funny. She was smart. We had a lot to share on, customer marketing and the kind of growth conversation that you and I are having now, Adrian. And we've met up basically every year since then. I just think those little things, when you're really in the pit of despair, those little things can be the things that bring the team through and bring you through as a leader too, and make the day not seem so dark.
That's awesome. I love it. I love the fact that she's like, that was me.
I had no idea she was going to be there. And in fact, I was incredibly embarrassed because, you know, I was sort of telling the story about this abstracted user. And then here's this person. It sort of humanized it in the moment for me, too.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you have any more that you, like that you two share? Because I think those are just brilliant.
Yeah, sure. So here's one more. I mentioned that, you know, as we've grown over time, our service has been a big growth engine for HubSpot. One of the ways in which we do that is we hire a lot of people into frontline support, you know, phone support or web ticket support, supporting our customers. And they tend to go off and have these really long, successful careers at HubSpot.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, most of our leadership today are people that we hired to do frontline support back even in 2012, 2013 during those dark times. And so sometimes things still get really busy. And a story that comes to mind is in, let's see, this is probably just a few years ago. For whatever reason, we had a ticket queue that was a little bit higher than we wanted it to be. And we said, man, how are we going to deal with this? So we thought about, oh, should we do overtime, right? Should we like try to tell our customers again? Should we level with them, be really honest that we're really behind? And somebody said, well, hold up. There's maybe 100 people in support today, but there's another 150 out there that work at this company that used to. Do you think we could call in the fire brigade and we could sort of, conscript some of them to handle some of these tickets? And so we sent out a note and we said, look, this is the situation in support, guys. You were all in support at one point in time. Remember what it was like. It was really hot. The queue was red, et cetera. And like something like 2/3 of them showed up. And we booked our big, you know, meeting room where we do our company meetings and stuff. And it was full of people. And they were all basically the alumni that had done support in the past. And it was really, really cool to see them come back to share their stories and to form relationships with the people that were on the team currently.
Yeah.
And that was just an awesome way for the people on the team today to say like, oh, there is light at the end of the tunnel, right? I'm going to grow my career. This is going to be a great thing. I'm going to end up like this other person who has a job they love. And then someday I can also give back to our customers in this particular way. And we've repeated that over time, a few times, largely because it forms great connective tissue between different members of the organization who may not otherwise interact, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of fire brigade thing is something we do a lot.
Excellent. I mean, I love the fact that it's just an idea that you've got a code red into your alumnus sort of thing, and then they leap into action, but then that's become almost a protocol, like in extremis, we can press the red button, as it were, and then you have a whole bunch, an old army of people that come to the rescue.
Yeah, and then it has all these positive externalities that we never anticipated either.
Yeah, no, completely. I think that's great. I mean, I also kind of think it keeps people connected to what's really happening on the front line, as it were, and it just that increased understanding and, like you say, connective tissue. I wish more companies would do, you know, something like that. In fact, I wish more companies would invest in a big red button that they could press every now and again, and then people would come running.
Indeed.
So, yeah. That, I mean, those are great stories. Thank you, Michael. I mean, so if I was to say to you that somebody's listening into this and they're thinking about their own service sort of team, the service operation, and thinking about sort of scaling up and or just making things better, I mean, if you were to give some advice to them and say, here's a couple of things I would say you should focus on where I think you can probably get some quick returns, as it were, what would you say to them?
Yeah, the very first thing I would say coming off the heels of those two stories is don't focus on delight and on those sort of high beta moments. They're going to happen. You want to make the best you can out of them. They make really good stories. They're not scalable, right? They're not actually what you want to do all day. They're flashes of creativity that make good conversation points, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what you want to do is you want to scale that kernel, that very center, that core of what made you excellent at customer experience when you were small, right? And those are probably things like a real human touch, like superb context to every interaction, a super conversational tone, not jilted and, you know, overly formal, and a really, like, you know, usually action-oriented disposition, a bias for action in the person that's handling the issue, right? And those are probably the things that you had when you were small, and you really need to ask yourself, how did we scale those? Like, how effectively do we deliver those same, you know, traits or emotions today, right?
Sure.
And I think that's super important, because most of the time you're not doing those heroics. You're really focusing on delivering, you know, an experience at 100% all of the time. That's about speed, quality, going the extra mile, and then having those traits. It's what you do every single day, hundreds or thousands of times per day. I think those are two things that I would recommend. And the third one is I recommend that people become students of the way that not just their customers work, but consumers at large.
Yeah.
Right. And so here in 2018, people behave differently than the way they did in 2015, in 2010, 2000, 1990, right? The whole thing. So if you've been in the industry for a while, great, but become a student of the way that people are changing. They're less patient today. They have less tolerance for problems. They trust you less, right? They have a megaphone attached to them that they can share their experiences with. There's a lot of changes going on. And if you can observe those and harness them, I think those are actually kind of the key to understanding how you can, change your service model to actually work better for your customers.
That's great advice. Thank you. And so, Michael, just a couple of final questions. I mean, so what's the next big thing, the next big challenge for you and HubSpot and your team over there? What's your next big hill that you're going to scale?
Yeah, it's a good question. I can see up that mountain right now. I think we're in a kind of fascinating place. We've had a very successful business for a long time. That business is largely built in this concept of inbound marketing, right? And marketing is sort of one area for us recently then with sales, and now upcoming, my job is to bring service software to market, right? So our goal is to complete the suite. Right. And with that, we have the Service Hub coming out and really an end-to-end customer management for prospect to lead to customer to promoter and advocacy. Right.
Yeah.
That's a sea change for a company like us or for any company to go from app to suite. So that's a really exciting hill that we're looking at climbing next. I think we're most of the way up it. It's an exciting one, though.
Fantastic. So, Michael, is there anything that we've missed out that you'd like to highlight before I ask you my final question?
Yeah, I would just like to put a finer point on something I said before, which is that I think really people need to be students of the way that their customer and their consumers are changing. It's not a fixed object, right? This is a moving target, and what worked for you yesterday might not work for you today. You need to be extremely open to change and adaptable, and study the way that people move over time, because you can't just do the same thing you've always been doing. You'll get outmoded, you'll get outcompeted, you'll become a dinosaur, and it happens really, really fast. So people need to pay attention to that nowadays.
Fantastic. Thank you. So that brings me to my final question, Michael, that I always ask at the end of these interviews. And the question is this: is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Absolutely. So like I said, we have a new product line coming out. It's called Service Hub. It'll be available in the first half of this year, which there's only a few weeks left, so stay tuned. And if you want to stay up to date on all the changes, you can go to blog.hubspot.com/service. That's where we put out all sorts of tips, actually, what I think is really good content for people that work in the service industry. And we'll also have, launch announcements and stuff like that there. So check out the blog, subscribe, and buy Service Hub when it's available.
Perfect. Michael, I will make sure when I do the write-up and edits and things like that, it all gets linked up so we can give you guys a big shout out. I just want to thank you for sharing your time and your experience kind of with us. I wish you the best of luck on the launch of and the growth of Service Hub. And yeah, just thanks once again for your time today. That's been awesome.
Yeah, thanks so much, Adrian, for a tremendous conversation. I think we covered a lot of excellent stuff. Appreciate it.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new, and I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adriansfrimsco.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.